I get those goosebumps every time you come around, yeah. You ease my mind, you make everything so fine. Worry about those comments, I'm way too numb, yeah. It's way too dumb, yeah. I get those goosebumps every time. I need the Heimlich, throw that to the side, yeah. I get those goosebumps every time, yeah. When you're not around me, throw that to the side, yeah. I get those goosebumps every time, yeah. 713, hey, 21, yeah, I'm riding. Body on me, body on me, I'm flying. Slipping low key, I'm slipping low key, and flying. I get those goosebumps every time. Hello, no goosebumps here. How is everyone on this fine evening? Right, hello everybody. Welcome to Loaded Mag in UFC. Now, I did make an attempt at changing the tune for our intro, but when I ran it through YouTube, the copyright kings killed me. It was going to be one of those days. From if anyone knows it from the new FC 24, but it's been one of those seasons. So yeah, nothing went right for me today, and a lot of fronts. But Pete, how are you?
Oh, flipping out. Yeah, well, I as I spoke to you boys, I've not been well over the weekend. Still not feeling 100% now, but yeah, I don't know what talking about last night's game is going to do to me. I'm not going to lie. I could be back in bed by 10 o'clock. But other than feeling a bit under the weather, everyone else is healthy and happy, so I can't complain.
Good, good. Christopher, how are you? The king of Cheltenham.
Yeah, mate. Do you know what? Cheltenham's been good today. I've had a bit of a hectic morning, but I've had a nice afternoon. But I hope I haven't caught anything off Pete, because the last couple of hours I felt a bit ropey. But I don't know whether it was all the excitement at Cheltenham, so maybe I'll feel better later on. But yeah, very despondent after yesterday's game, not gonna lie. Really disappointed. I know we're gonna get into it, but just you know, same shit, different day, unfortunately. But how are you, Daz, anyway? You all right, mate?
I'm grand, yeah. Apart from the game yesterday, yeah, well, there. My wife has been sick the last few days as well, with Ken Owen being sick on Mother's Day of all days. Wow. But we're the rest of us are okay. She's on the mend now as well. But yeah, apart from that, a better game to talk about would be our game on the 29th of March, the charity game for the Alan Shearer Foundation, where Loaded Mag, yes, I put Loaded Mag first, Sam Mulliner versus Newcastle Fans TV. So looking forward to that when we get over for we're there for the next league game. Hopefully we'll have something to double celebrations that weekend, lads. That's what we're hoping for. But yeah, the link is in the chat if anyone does want to donate, and it's also it's on screen as well, and it's also in the description. But let's get into this game. Right, let's start it off. Here is the team. Barnes out with the injury. Miggy was selected over Murphy. Longstaff selected over Miley. Newcastle haven't beaten Chelsea in the league since May 2012. And, spoiler alert, still haven't beaten them. But, lads, what do you think of the team that lined up? Pete.
Yeah, you look at the team, you see Tino's starting, and you see Willock's in the team, Isaac. You're looking at that team and you're thinking it's kind of what you're expected. The only real change was is that Murphy came out for Miggy. I wasn't against it. Miggy's work rate up and down and stopped Chelsea. It kind of made sense. He's probably been a bit more of a workhorse, but everything else was kind of as I expected. The one that you alluded to was the big Mrs. Barnes, because having him come off the bench was something that we've become accustomed to in the last couple of weeks. So it would have been nice to have that option. But it is as we kind of expected, really. I'm not going to lie.
Chris, your thoughts on the lineup?
Yeah, pretty much exactly the same as Pete. For me, but hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? I still think it was a mistake to drop Murphy and put Miggy in. But as I say, if Miggy had scored and we'd won, I'm sure I would have felt differently. But yeah, I mean, that was the only thing for me. I personally would have started Murphy because I thought he had a good game last game. But again, as Pete's kind of alluded to, you know, I can kind of see why Eddie Howe's chosen Miggy. And let's not forget, Murphy hasn't been back all that long, so maybe he's just trying to protect him a little bit. So it made sense. But yeah, everybody else, it was as expected.
Yeah, I'm with you guys as well. I would have gone up for Murphy over Miggy. That was my thoughts as well when I saw the team news. Here's the Chelsea team as well, but we saw enough of them yesterday. Right, let's get into it. First 5 minutes, positive for me. The first five, the best bit of the game for me was the first 5 minutes, because we were positive. I thought, oh, we're up for this. I just thought in my head, going, Pete can always tell in the first couple of minutes whether we're going to get something. I think, oh, I think we're going to get something here. No, but then on the fifth minute, Chelsea goal. Cole Palmer with a shot from distance after a Botman clearance and found its way to him, and Jackson with the deflection or a little kind of nice touch from him put it in the back of the net around Dubs, who was nowhere near it. So thoughts on that first goal for Chelsea?
Fuck's sake.
Oh. Yes, we have to do this.
There's two more
in our contracts.
Lad, it was an absolute joke of a goal. Chelsea hadn't really. It was their first attack. Yeah. It was their first attack. They haven't put a. I know it was early on in the game, but they didn't even look like they were going to create anything. And it's a shocking clearance from Botman. When I first watched it, I thought the ball's been whipped in at him with pace. He's just tried to almost kind of guide the ball back out and just make sure he's got rid of it, but it's just not far enough. It's not a good enough clearance, and it's on his favoured foot as well. You just expect better. But then even then, it drops to the edge of the area. Palmer, he takes a shot. The shot's going wide. Looking at the angle behind the goal, it looks like it's going wide. And it's just a deflection that takes it back in from Jackson. But the goalkeeping, how are you getting beat from there? People in the Sky, in the Sky studio, Ian Wright and Carragher were saying about, you know, he might have been unsighted. I'm sorry, like, he's flat-footed. And this is not going to be the last time we talk about Dubravka being flat-footed. It's just a comedy of errors that just gifts Chelsea the lead. And you know what, boys? I don't know if you spotted this yourself. They almost, the fans, the players, they almost look shocked that they'd scored. They couldn't believe the fact that they'd scored a goal and that early on in the game. It was like we just gifted them the goal. I couldn't believe it. Like, the shock on Cole Palmer's face, like the fans, it was almost like a delayed celebration from the Chelsea fans, because they didn't even expect it. That's how bad that goal was. Jesus Christ, man. Like, I'll get into it in a bit, but it was an absolute nightmare start. After that positivity that you talked about, Daz, we pressed up well. We caused them a few problems. We were having to kick it out for goal kicks into the touch because we were pressing them high. And then we go and do that and just think, flipping out. It's going to be one of those days. But yeah, poor, poor goal.
One of those days. Yep, the team. Chris, your thoughts on Chelsea's first goal?
Do you know what? I not that I'm disagreeing with Pete, but it was funny because it was so early on, and because of how it happens, I wasn't too down about it, because it's one of those goals where, I mean, let's be clear, and Pete's already described it, the clearance from Botman is poor. It's really, really poor. But it's one of those goals where, you know, the player just puts a little bit of pace on it, shoots at will. You know, he didn't think he was going to score. And then Nicholas Jackson sees it coming towards him and he just does like a little flick. That saying, Pete's absolutely right, you know, when he says about Martin Zubravka just being flat-footed. Like, you know, again, we will get into it later. But I think quite a lot of the... If you looked at all the goalies in the Premier League, quite a lot of them would have saved that. When Nicholas Jackson flicked it, it took the pace out of it. And he should be on his feet ready, you know, like on his toes, ready to move. So I have little sympathy with Martin Zubravka on that one. However, as I say, you do see goals like that. And I was a bit, I think because it was so early on and because, like you said, Daz, we made a positive start, I didn't give it much thought, as in it happens. And I was like, okay, we've got a mountain to climb now. But I still didn't feel like, I wasn't worried at that point, put it that way, because I thought, you know what, those kind of goals happen. And I even said to my mates in the chat, I went, just wait. And I'll have to send it to you boys. I went, just wait. Alexander Isak's going to get a chance. And when he pops, it'll be 1-1. And, you know, I'm more disappointed about what happened afterwards, if I'm honest. That goal, I've seen them before and we'll see them again. I think Chelsea just took a pot shot. Nicholas Jackson, whose touch, by the way, is absolutely dreadful. And it just so happens that his touch wasn't bad for that. You know, we had his back to goal. I don't even think he was entirely sure where the ball was going. So I kind of take it as a bit of a fluky one. It's just one of those shitty goals that sometimes you concede. But yeah, Botman's clearance isn't good enough. And Dubravka needs to react quicker.
Hey, I was setting up for another show that we'll probably do in the next couple of weeks or week. Dubravka is 35. I didn't realize that. Not a great age, Eddie, before you even think about saying it. Not a great age in football in terms. No. But yeah, let's move on. Newcastle didn't were days where the goal, I find it difficult to get into the game. I wrote down here, Longstaff, sloppy at best. Miggy and Gordon switch it up to try and provide some cover for Byrne, with Miggy kind of more tracking back. Gordon had already taken the knock to the knee. At this stage, then on 34 minutes, Gordon was off and Murphy was on. Probably linking back and building on the earlier incident. We will be talking about Gordon towards the end of the show as well, or after we go through this analysis. We'll get through these goals first. Some crosses into dangerous positions for Newcastle, but no joy. That's when Murphy was beating the man. Then 42 minutes, Isak goal, great ball from Bruno, and Isak, Mr. Ice, passed it into the bottom corner. 1-1. There was a bit of hope. There was a lot of language in our own chat messages by Mr. Davey. On that one, because we thought then, this is on here, we're going to go live right after the match. Thoughts on Isak's goal? Come on, Pete.
Oh. You know, the one shining light in our performance, Alexander Isak. Jesus Christ. Give him what he wants in the summer. Give him what he wants. Keep him. Do whatever you can to keep him at the club, because he's the one guy that can produce a moment like that out of nothing. It was an absolute superb finish. And we've come to be used to seeing that type of quality from Alexander Isak. I have to say, it's a great find from Bruno. It was a bit of a ping ball situation in there with Chelsea and Newcastle. We're just giving each other the ball back. You have the ball. No, you have the ball. It was one of them. Bruno gets hold of the ball, dinks it forward to Isak. And it's just the way that he takes it so early that beats the goalkeeper. He just shifts the ball, and just within the shift, he hits it. And De Sassi can't set himself. The goalkeeper can't set himself, and it's right into that far corner. Thierry Henry-esque. He used to do it all the time playing for Arsenal. It's a superb finish. It really, really is. And I have to say, at that point, yeah, there was some not particular pleasant language being said in our chat celebrating. So yeah, that beat as the road has. Thank you for reminding me. And I thought we're in here. We're back in the game. And at that point, I did think that if anyone was going to score, it was going to be us. A superb goal from Alexander Isak, and he's just proven why he's the second best striker in the Premier League this season, easily.
Segue here before we go to Chris. This is a Football Manager segue. I remember you telling me, Pete, because you'd gone ahead to me in Football Manager, that Isak was always saying, I wanted a keeper. So I brought him a keeper in my Football Manager. So I brought him Mamashvili. So he won't have to say that to me. So give him what he wants.
Did you not buy him Hugo Lloris? No.
No, definitely not.
Am I okay with the fact that I bought both?
Yes.
I did get a short stop from Hugo Lloris just before he retired, because I need the goalkeeper in there. When the January window opened, Mamardashvili came in, and all of a sudden his problems went away.
Hugo Lloris. Hugo Lloris is playing out in the snow now, I think, these days.
Isak's problems and Newcastle's problems went away because we got rid of Hugo Lloris and we got Robert Atchley. So, and I bet you any money, he's saying the same to Eddie Howe right now. Get me a goalkeeper.
Yeah. Bring back Pope as well. Chris, your thoughts on Isak's goal?
Just sublime, mate. Just sublime. I don't know if I told you boys, I think I have, that like I've hurt my arm. So over the last like 3-4 weeks, I've played squash like 3 or 4 weeks ago, and strained my arm. Still sore now. I mean, I can use it, but it's like, you know, like if I put any weight on it or whatever, it hurts. Isak scores. I'm literally in the living room, goes towards the cabinet where the telly's on, and I'm banging the cabinet because I'm just like, it was just the most beautiful goal. It was just unbelievable. And then my arm felt it afterwards. And I'm messaging news. I had it all in capsules. Didn't I? I'm messaging news, got these fucking brilliance and all that. And I messaged my mates, and I was like, so I went one up from Pete. I went, currently, right now, best striker in the league. Best striker in the league right now. He's silly, silly good. And do you know what? My overriding feeling, and I don't know about you boys, my overriding feeling of full time was like, we've got to sort this out because we need to keep this guy, because he didn't deserve to be on the losing team last night, because that finish was just, all my mates coming back going, oh, Tony's better, Watkins better. I'm not getting into it, but they knew. Do you know what it was? Pete, you described it as Thierry Henry-esque. And it's the way he creates that little yard, as you say, and he strokes it home. He doesn't even put that much power on it, but he's put enough on it so that the keeper can't get there. Like, he hasn't even put like full power on it, and it just goes in the bottom corner. And the defender, De Sassi's nowhere near it, and Petrovic, he can't react quick enough. So, unlike we blamed Zabavka for not reacting quick enough, I can't blame Petrovic for that, because it was just a great finish. It really, really was. And at 1-1. I'm pumped. I'm really up for it now, and I'm thinking we're going to win this now. That's where I was. Sore arm, absolutely pumped.
He uses the defender, De Sassi. He just uses it just to bend it round him, and that's what some of the best strikers do. They don't need to smash the ball. They just need to be able to just guide the ball round the player, so it just blindsides the goalkeeper. It's exactly what it was. But I, you know what I love? I love the fact that Gary Neville and Carragher, they try their hardest not to big up Alexander Isak. They really do. It's because he's at Newcastle United. If he was at Arsenal, if he was at Liverpool, they would be talking about him as one of the top strikers in Europe. It's always the same. They were so reluctant. Like, Gary Neville's reaction to the ball going in is almost of shock. And if that would have been someone else, you would have got some weird noises coming out of his mouth to celebrate the goal going in. If that was a Man United player, the amount of times he's reacted to Rasmus Højlund tapping the ball into the net like he's scored a 30-yard screamer. But yeah, he's kind of almost shocked that Alexander Isak's doing it. And they hate the fact that we've got a top-level striker, top striker, one of the best in Europe, playing for Newcastle United. They hate it. And this is why it's so important, and you boys have said it, we need to keep hold of him in the summer. We have to keep hold of him. Lads, you cannot replace Alexander Isak. Who are you replacing him with? If you're replacing him, you're spending more than what we paid for Alexander Isak to get someone of his ability.
Like, we talked about this the other day, Pete. You're absolutely right. And it's a genuine question, isn't it? I forget who said it. Somebody said it. And the question was, would you swap Alexander Isak for anyone at the moment in Europe? And I genuinely can't think of anyone I'd swap him for. Genuinely can't think of anyone. He's that good.
You wouldn't. You kind of like, you're looking at your Osimhens and players like that as maybe as someone along the same lines as him. But, you know, Osimhen's a top striker. He's going through a difficult moment at the moment. He's a top striker. But they're talking about Osimhen is 120 million. This boy's doing what he's doing. Doing what Osimhen's doing. We don't need Osimhen. We don't need him. We've got a player here, similar age, just as good in front of goal. Like, what? Honestly, he has to stay. He has to stay. He does.
If anyone from KIF is watching, though, if you want to bring us Osimhen, we will make room in the squad for him as well as Isak. But that's not going to happen. Look, Chris, I was on the same page as you. I thought we were winning this game, and I got all my pictures ready for halftime, half them I could. So that's how confident I was. But the first half wasn't over yet because Chelsea had the ball in the net, but it was offside. Willock then had a chance just on the halftime mark. Nope, there was Willock's chance first, and then there was a Dubravka save from Sterling right on halftime, that which took us to that then. Then let's get into the second half. One Chelsea goal down, two to go. Miggy shot saved right at the start of the second half. He had the power in the shot, but went straight at the keeper. The first 10 minutes of the game was very open. There was kind of space everywhere for both sides. Newcastle were then living dangerously. But then 57 minutes, Cole Palmer goal went through Botman's legs, I think, and he took the ball in tight space to make it 2-1. But Chris, we go to you with thoughts on the second goal from Cole Palmer.
Really frustrating. Lisa was in the living room with me, and literally she said about 10 seconds, before the goal went in, why are you all at the back? Why are you all sitting at the back? And I was like, I said, don't worry. I said, we did this against Wolves. I said, we're just soaking the pressure up. And then I said, we're looking to hit on the counter. But if you're going to do that, you need to defend properly. And we just didn't. It's just so annoying. I think, and I could be wrong here, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the ball gets played into Cole Palmer. And I think it's Dan Byrne who lets him go. I think Dan Byrne, Cole Palmer's originally on the right, Dan Byrne's on the left. Cole Palmer drifts in and Dan Byrne's left him. And then Cole Palmer, again, it reminds me a little bit of the first goal. You know, he shot from distance. Don't get me wrong, I'm not taking anything away from him because, to be fair, it was a really decent effort on goal, as it proved, because it went in. But again, maybe I'm sounding harsh, but I wanted Bruno to close him down a lot quicker. Bruno's a good 3 or 4 yards away from him. Like, it summed up the whole performance for me. It was just lethargic. We were too slow to react. Cole Palmer hits it, and then, you know, Sven Botman, I don't know, it goes through Sven Botman's legs, and you could call it unlucky, but I'm fed up now of the ball constantly going through players' legs. You know, I get that, you know, you're trying to block it and stuff like that, but Just stand up and make it difficult. How many goals have we conceded this season where it's gone through players' legs? And I'm not telling players to shut the legs and be like a statue, but it's so frustrating. That's one goal I can't really blame Dubravka for, because I do feel like he was a bit unsighted on that one. But again, just unlucky. Just it, so annoying. But it should have been prevented earlier on. As I say, I'm pretty sure Dan Byrne's left them. Dan Byrne was at left back. Cole Palmer drifts in and Bruno needs to close quicker. If the defence had kind of moved out a little bit, if someone had closed, whether Botman could have closed them, I don't know. I think Botman was too far away. I do think it was Bruno. But Botman, straight through the legs and 2-1. And yeah, I just felt deflated again then. And I also felt stupid because I told my wife that we had it all under control. And then 10 seconds later, he scored.
Well, if your Lisa had any connections to Bournemouth or was related in some fashion to Eddie Howe, there's a job for her in the backroom staff. Pete, your thoughts on the second goal from Chelsea?
I'm slightly different here, is because I do think Dubravka's to blame. I think that... I think he plays a big part in it. I think the defending is poor. Rewind a little bit. Let's go right back to the beginning. 5 minutes before that goal was coming. The goal was coming. And I think I might have even put it in the chat. That goal was coming 5 minutes before the ball even hit the net. And the reason being is because that was what? I think that was about the 58th minute. Was that 58?
57 like minutes, yeah.
We've not even hit the 60-minute mark. And I'm looking around at our players. I'm looking around at Dan Byrne, who looked out on his feet. He looked like he played for 120 minutes. He looked shattered. I'm looking around at Miggy, looked tired. I'm looking around at Willock, looked shattered, understandably working his way back into the team. I'm looking at Bruno, who's got energy to burn, who looked shattered, who at times in the build-up to that goal was walking. Walking back out. So there was a wave from Chelsea in, out. And every time they got the ball and were coming back in, the midfield was only just walking out and they were walking out. And to be fair, Sky touched on it. And I thought it was more than a valid point. We looked absolutely shattered. And we looked like we just had no intensity, no work rate. We just didn't have it in us. And we almost needed... at that point, a Bruno or a Willock to go down in the middle, holding their head, so everyone could get a break. We needed that, and we just needed a smart play. Everyone looked shattered. Just go down. Just even if we get possession back, to put the ball out, someone go down, and everyone get a drink of water, and let's just take a breath. That's kind of what we needed at that point. But anyway, the wave comes back in. Yep, Palmer cuts inside. Shoots. I think it does go through his legs. I can't remember off the top of my head. But what stuck out obvious to me before Palmer had even shot at goal, I'm looking at Dubravka. I'm thinking, you're not set here. You're out of position.
And he was too far over. To be fair, he was too far over. Yeah,
and he was. He was too far over one side of the pitch. So on one side of the goal. Sorry. So he's left three quarters of that goal to shoot at. And look at where the ball actually goes into the net. It's not right into the corner. It's not right past the post or right next to the post. It's actually closer to the middle of the goal than not. And actually, if he'd have shifted over 2 yards and been in the right position, standing position, it'd have saved it. It'd have actually saved that. Because he actually does get down and get across, but it's too far away from him to get down and actually try and make a save. And those 2 yards are so crucial. Yes, it could have been defended better. The players were tired, understandably. You're absolutely right, and we'll talk about it in the next goal as well. Balls going through defenders' legs. It's happening far too often. Their stance, their body position, something has to change. Something has to change, whether they stand, whether they're standing with their legs closer together and they're trying to kind of almost be that block. So at least the goalkeeper can see the side of him. Whatever it is, I don't know. But something needs to change there because it's happening too often. Too often to be a coincidence for me. But the goalkeeping, for me, is the reason why the ball goes in the net. And I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. Like, yes, Martin Dubravka has come in and made some good saves and he's had one or two good games. But I'm sorry. He's not good enough for Newcastle United. He is not good enough for Newcastle United. And I don't mean as a first-choice goalkeeper. I even mean as a backup. He's not good enough for Newcastle United. And maybe that's me being biased because I didn't want him to come back to the club when after he come back from Man United. I've said it to you boys before, well documented. I didn't want him back. And there's a reason. He is finished for me at Newcastle United. And someone just put it in the chat. David Cook just put hurry up, Pope. I was absolutely gutted to hear that Pope's now been kind of pushed back to April, as in coming back, because we need him back. He is such an important goalkeeper for us. And those stats don't lie, boys. I don't know if you've got the pick, Daz, or whether you managed to put it up. I can grab it in a second because I do have it.
I have a tweet from Jordan that had some good stats on it. But Dubravka specific, you have?
No, it's just the Pope Dubravka stats. So up until Pope got injured. I've got it here. I managed to pull it off, and it's damning. It's absolutely damning. So I'll read it out, and then I'll put it on the screen in a bit. So with Pope, goals conceded 14, which was the second best in the league. It's actually, I think, joint first at that point in which he got injured. Six clean sheets at that point, which was up there as one of the best in the league. Games where we conceded three or more goals, one that was second in the league, in terms of we were one of the best. We conceded the least amount of those. Shots faced per game 11.6, which was fourth in the league at that point. Save ratio 74%, that was third in the league. Keeper sweeping 11, that was third in the league. Okay, in the 14 games without Pope, goals conceded with Dubravka. So it was 14 for Pope, 34 for Dubravka. 19th in the league. So a second bottom. Clean sheets, 2 in comparison to Pope's 6. We're 15th in the league for that. Games where we've conceded 3 or more goals, 8. 8 games where we've conceded 3 or more goals out of that 14. That is unacceptable. For a team that's fighting for European football, that is absolutely unacceptable. And we're bottom of the league for that. We've been in more games and conceded 3+ goals than any other team in the Premier League since Martin Dubravka's come in the team. That is not by coincidence. That isn't. That's way beyond that now. Shots faced per game, Pope's was 11.6, fourth in the league. Shots faced for Dubravka, 16.6. He's 15th in the league, so a big drop there. Save ratio per game, Pope's was 74, Dubravka's 67%. So not too far off, but enough to drop down significantly in the league. We've gone down to 11th there. And keeper sweeping, Pope's was 11, Dubravka's is 5, 17th in the league, which tells its own story. There is a huge, huge problem here, lads. We've talked about it a bit here and there. Martin Dubravka is not good enough for Newcastle United. It is not. And Chris Dawson, I agree that those stats are damning. They come from Sky yesterday. When I watched, I actually took a picture on my TV when that came up because I was absolutely stunned at what I'd seen. And I knew it was bad. I knew the stats were bad, but I didn't know they were that bad. That's relegation. That's relegation level goalkeeping. I'm sorry. It is so, so bad. And your team, boys, your team is built on a goalkeeper. You look at the best teams. They're built on quality goalkeepers. We haven't got one. Well, we have, but he's injured. And our backups are not good enough.
100% agree, Pete. Let's finish this. Right, 58 minutes, saved on the line. Sterling ran through, shot, Burns cleared it off the line. Then Byrne landed awkwardly. Yeah, I can't remember. Could have been from a corner, but looked like he was carrying a bit of an injury then. And they had decided at this stage they were going to make a switch. So 69 minutes, Kraft comes on, Byrne is off, Anderson is on, and Miggy is off. Last one, lads. Last Chelsea goal. Let's get through this. Mudrick scores. Someone played the ball on the wing, but Mudrick picks it up. He kind of waltzes through, past Char, and took it around Dubs. 3-1 Chelsea. Chris.
It was this one was the worst one for me. This was the worst one by far. Ball gets picked up quite. I'm trying to think of my words. It gets picked up. I keep wanting to say early in their half, but I don't mean that. Like in the Chelsea half, quite deep into the Chelsea half, and then it gets pinged out to the left towards Nicholas Jackson. Now, Sven Botman. And I said this two or three times during the game, not just about Botman, but about a few players. There's certain times where you've got to take a yellow. You've got to take one for the team, as they call it. You do not let the player go. You just don't. If you've got to take the yellow, you've got to take a mistake's been made earlier on. You've got to rectify it and make sure that the player doesn't get near the goal. You've just got to take him down. Pull his shirt, whip him up, do whatever you've got to do, stop him. And Botman doesn't do that. And then he gets into a foot race with Nicholas Jackson, which he's not going to win, quite simply. And he didn't. Ball gets played into the box. So Botman's been left hung up to dry on our right wing, their left wing. Ball gets played into the box. Do not know what Fabian Schär's doing. Like, Mudryk picks it up. I wouldn't mind. It's two poor touches from Mudryk. Poor touches. And Schär's, you know, his feet are everywhere, doesn't know what he's doing. Mudryk somehow ends up with the ball. And then the biggest frustration for me from yesterday, in terms of Martin Dubravka, is he sees this happening in front of him. So this is all unfolding in front of him. Now, for me, I'm not a goalkeeper, so, you know, maybe other people have got an opinion on it. But for me, he's got to smell that danger. He's got to see that something's not quite right. Come off your line a little bit. But anyway, he stays on his line. He's obviously watching. And then Mudryk makes it through Schär. And then he's like, ooh, should I go? And before he knows it, he comes out too late. Mudryk rounds him, puts it in. And honestly, like, you can blame Botman, you can blame Schär, because Dubravka should never have been put in that position. It was terrible defending. But again, Martin Dubravka, he's just made it so easy for Mudryk. And then the worst thing was, you know, I think it was Gary Neville saying, oh, is this going to kickstart his career at Chelsea now? And I'm thinking, are you watching the same game? Like, he's just had the most fortunate bit of luck. He's had two poor touches, which we've let him get away with. And then he's rounded the keeper because the keeper's come off the line too late. And it's just been easy for him. Don't get me wrong, Mudryk's got electric pace. But Martin Dubravka made that very easy for him. And then Gary Neville starts waxing lyrical about, you know, Mikhailo Mudryk turning his career around. And this is going to be now. This is where we see the real Mikhailo Mudryk. Don't know where he got that from. Just really disappointing goal to concede. And it capped off a really, really poor performance from our defence, from Martin Dubravka. I'm not even going to get into the midfield with the likes of Sean Longstaff. I'm not even going to go there because he may as well have not been on the pitch for me. Really, really frustrating. But yeah, poor goal to concede and just kind of sum the night up. And I think that's where, I don't know whether you said it or not, Pete, but you were like, I just want the season to end now. Because it was just sums our season up. You know, we had the Gordon injury and then we're making stupid mistakes like that. We made Chelsea look half decent last night, and they're really not. They're not a good team. So very disappointed. And 3-1, and I'm just thinking, I just want to turn the telly off at this point.
As Pete is crying there, I know Pete, you uploaded that picture that you're talking about just before there. So let's show that, and you can link it into the goal.
Yeah, linking into how rubbish our goalkeeper is currently. Chris, you mentioned about Dubravka. I was more annoyed with Schär at the time, letting it go through his legs. I thought Schär was going through his lazy phase. I thought a few of them were. That goal just typified the fact that a few of them, their heads are gone. They'd switched off. In their minds, even though at 2-1, in their minds, they were thinking the game's done. The lack of will to defend that ball typifies it all. You talked about Sean Longstaff. He's a guy that is in that team to run all day for you, to work hard, to win the ball back, to never give up a loose ball or an opportunity to nick the ball in. All he's done is just give up. After that, the way Mudrick waltzes by three midfielders, pops it through Shaw's legs. And it's just that, you know what? Before I even get to the Dubravka part, it's the reaction of the players. So he waltzes by the three midfielders and they all just stand there. They all stood there on the semicircle. They all just stood there just watching. There's no, I need to get back in. Whether you get there or not, just show some will. Shaw gets megged and he just stands there and I watched it from behind the goal. He gets megged and he kind of just goes this.
Yeah. I better react to this.
I need to get back. I need to get back in.
It's the arms.
Resignation, like knows that it's going in. Just give up. It just a really poor mentality. But the goalkeeping, Chris, I'm sorry. I was focused on Shaw. It is horrendous, mate. It is absolutely horrendous. And you know what? I watched it about an hour ago. I watched that second half. And I didn't realise how bad it was. And I've just seen it again just to check that it was actually that bad. Just to triple check. But you are absolutely right. It was horrendous goalkeeper. And someone put in the chat that he does it all the time. But we know this. Yeah. Go back and watch him under Rafa. Exactly the same. Exactly the same. It's just, oh my God. Please. I don't want to give up on this season, boys. I really don't. But when I see stuff like that, it just makes me think, what are we doing here? What are we doing? Like,
we're so fortunate, Pete, that and this was going to be my positivity call. We're so lucky that we're actually not that far away. I know we keep saying it, but we're not that far away, and we've got a decent little run of games. But we've really got to start waking up. Got to wake up, because last night's performance was just it's just so frustrating, because it just feels like, you know, you were saying, Pete, about the players being tired. It feels like they're lethargic. They're just going through the motions. Mm. It's like they're feeling how we're feeling. They're just like, oh, wrap the season up. You know, oh, let's just draw a line under it and go, you know. But there's an opportunity there for us to get up to sixth, I'd say. It's looking slimmer now we've had that defeat. Don't get me wrong. But we've still got 9 games left, you know. And we've got to play Man United. We've got to play Tottenham.
10,
sorry. Yeah.
Yeah,
there's still chances. There really is, but we've got to start picking these points up. We've got to start winning these games, because sooner or later, you know, we could then find ourselves 11th, 12th, 13th, and then we're going to be going, oh, we still could get 6th, and it will just go on and on and on and on, and it's just so annoying. Chelsea,
don't let it get you, lads. Though that's the thing, because as I said to you in the chat, and I said it like a couple of months ago, stepping stone season. There'll be highs, there's going to be lows, this roller coaster, and just take what we're given now at this stage. Just write it out.
You know what, boys? Like, this is the thing that was kind of going through my head as I'm watching, and I'm going back to the second goal now, like the Cole Palmer goal. I'm watching that goal unfold, and I've said to you boys, and I've said these players look absolutely shattered. At 57 minutes. Is that right, Daz, the goal? 57 minutes? 57
minutes to goal, yeah. I remember your message around then, yeah.
Yeah, so around that sort of time in the game, they looked absolutely shattered and out of their feet. Even the likes of me that runs all day for you, Bruno, they look shattered. And they go and waltz in and score that goal. But lads, they had about 8 or 9 days to prepare for that game. It was a Monday night kickoff. We played Wolves on the Saturday at 3 o'clock. I'm just thinking, how are these boys tired? How are these boys so shattered after 60 minutes? I get it. November, December, I understand it. Champions League, Carabao Cup, quarterfinals, Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Sunday, whatever it was, constant with no players to choose from. We've got some of those players back. And these boys are having full week training. How were they shattered at 60 minutes? I don't. That's the thing in my mind that frustrates the hell out of me. How are these boys tired? Willock, I get. Just coming back in. But Isak's had a number of games now playing regular, at least 60, 70 minutes. You've got Gordon, of course, got injured, but Murphy is fit as a fiddle. Miggy, fit as a fiddle. You know, Longstaff's played every minute under the sun, and I'm not having this ankle injury, playing injured. Rubbish. Absolute rubbish. He's just rubbish at the moment. Nothing to do with his ankle. He's just rubbish, right? Playing absolute rubbish football. I'm sorry. I'm not having it. It's no excuse. If he's that unfit, you've got a young lad, Lewis Miley, who again, by the way, has another assist to his name, that comes on, that can go and play and do more than Sean Longstaff. There's no excuses there, right? These players have had enough time on the training ground to be fit and ready to run their heart out for 90 minutes. I don't buy it. I don't get it. And I don't know what you're doing. Do you disagree?
I agree with what you're saying, Pete. The only one I can give any kind of an excuse to is Bruno, because his wife was only after giving birth. So yeah. And he even got an assist. You know? And he didn't get a yellow card. He's playing within himself, though. Yeah.
What to go.
Yeah. Well, as long as he doesn't get injured. We'll get to see him against West Ham. Right, lads, where we will move on, because this game is not over yet, or is it? So Newcastle didn't fall asleep, speaking about sleep, because Bruno gets robbed then at this stage as well. That's when robs the ball off him. There was no shout, house or anything like that. And about 74 minutes, Miley is on, Bruno is off, no yellows, as I said. White is on, Willock is off. I said, at this point, Newcastle concede the game. But 89 minutes, Murphy with a wonder goal, top corner, making it 3-2. Maybe there's a chance. But, what do you make of Murphy's goal, lads?
Go on, Chris, fella.
That reaction that Jacob Murphy's doing there, like, fantastic. What a finish. Absolutely fantastic finish. And I did kind of think, I was kind of thinking to myself, should have started him. Brilliant finish. And I think he did get a little bit of credit off the lads in the Sky studio for that. But yeah, fantastic finish. But unfortunately, the game was done by then. So it was a shame. I'm not gonna dwell on it too much, but you know, Miley showing the composure, nice little simple ball into Murphy. Beats Kukurea. I think he actually spun him. Kukurea was like obviously trying to block him. He spins round him, looks up, gets his shot off. I'll tell you what, I bet if he'd done that another 100 times, he'd only hit about 3 of them in. Because that was some finish at the near post. Petrovic had no chance getting to that. But yeah, fantastic finish, but just a shame that it didn't mean anything in the end.
Pete, Murphy's goal.
Great finish. I just wish we'd have had more of that during the game. Just putting shots onto that goalkeeper, giving them something to think about. If you go back and watch over the course of the game, we get into decent positions on the edge of the area, but sometimes we just want to play the most difficult ball, or we want to walk it in. And sometimes it's just very simple, just like Alexander Isak did, just shift the ball and have a pop at goal. You never know. Like, some of the goals that Chelsea have conceded recently are similar to us. Deflections going into the other side. You know, I mean, just slight mistakes or unsighting the goalkeeper. It's exactly the same as us. So put them under pressure. Put a shot towards goal. I don't really remember too many direct shots towards goal other than the two that we scored. So we've actually given the goalkeeper a relatively comfortable game, who isn't the best goalkeeper. He's okay. He's better than what they already had. I think it's better than Sanchez, but he's not great. And I just think they got off far too lightly, but it was a great strike. And why not play him in the next game, Chris? Why not? And I don't mean the FA Cup quarterfinals. Play him in that, by all means. I mean, why not start him against West Ham? We might not have a choice, in all honesty.
Get to that.
Yeah, but why not give him an opportunity? Because, as you said, and you're right, it was unlucky for him to get dropped, really, to the bench.
Leon, sir, I wasn't aware of that, Leon.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe that's why then. That makes sense.
Fair play. But then you've got to ask the question, why? Why is he not trained a week? If it's something family related or personal, then that's fine. But if it's something related to, you know, an injury or managing an injury, like, what's happened there? Why is it happening? Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Right. That's it. 3-2. That's shortly, we'll never have to talk about this game ever again. But some key words that were circulating about was Longstaff, sloppy, as I refer to him. There was a lot of talk then of people saying, oh, get rid of Eddie out, new manager, blah, 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 blah. That talk, Tino, we didn't mention Tino, but he had a brilliant game. And people had in the chat as well, he did get kicked a bit. He was the best player on the pitch. Botman, what's happened? What's going on? Is he still injured? Is he still carrying that injury? Blah, blah, blah. So we're still missing Pope. Then linking into some of the stats, I'm going to bring up something Jordan put up. UCL's Premier League form since they beat Manchester United on the 2nd of December, gone from 5th to 10th, 14 points from 14 games, 1-4, drew 2, lost 8, goals 4-4, 27, goals against 34, goal difference minus 7, and 14th in the table since then. Okay. Anyway. That's an interesting tweet from Jordan. It just shows you, highlights how bad it's gone. It's kind of crazy to think that it's still the same season that we're beating PSG and nearly beating them in Paris as well. But one of the other talking points, and I think we'll come to this now, is Mr. Anthony Gordon. And I know it's kind of changed during the day. Some people saying he's out for the season. Some people is saying he's out for 6 or 7 months. Scans, believe, aren't results aren't back yet, but whether to be out for a long time, a short time, we see him against West Ham. Definitely won't see him, I imagine, against City. But thoughts on the latest talk on Anthony Gordon? That's
I tweeted out not long before the show when all of it came out. I think it was NFC Gallagher that put it out initially, saying 6 to 7 months. A lot of people have kind of jumped on that. Then you had the Rider, the Chronicle, coming out saying that the club don't think it's as bad as first feared, and that they're going to be having scans this week at the training ground. What I'd say is that we've just got to wait and see. But I watched it back again, and he actually plays on for quite a while and doesn't look to be he just goes for a run to press the ball. I think Shaw plays a long ball across. He goes for a run, and it's just as he ends the run, it's almost like his knee kind of jolts slightly and he pulls up, and he's obviously flexing it. But then he gives the thumbs up to the coaching staff and the physios. He gives it up 2 or 3 times to say, I'm okay. He carries on. Very, very quickly gets pulled to the other side, because what happens is they start loading Newcastle's left-hand side and he ain't running back. Now, it didn't help that at that point, Willock wasn't doing the running back either. So Burn was massively isolated at that point, whereas against Wolves, Willock was making the runs back even when Gordon wasn't, or they were alternating. None of them were running back or getting back into that position, which opened up so much space for them. So they had to change things. And actually, fair play to Miggy when he went onto that side. I thought he did well. I thought he played much better there on that left-hand side and tracked better and did a better job for the team than he did on the right-hand side. But when they pulled him onto this left-hand side, he played okay. He was making sprints. He was passing the ball. He tried to put a ball in behind to Isak. And then all of a sudden, it's the knock from behind from, I can't remember who it was now. I'm not sure if it was Gusto. Someone on that left-hand side. It might have been Cucurella, because Cucurella was left back. Has gone in the back of him. And then he's gone down. And even then, he doesn't look concerned. But it's as he goes to stand up and he goes, oof. And he holds something straight the way. And then he was like, you can hear him mouthing. He's like, come on, like, I can't play anymore. Yeah, and he literally mouths that. He mouths that, I can't play. And at that point, they just need to get him off. Like, if he can't play, get him off, make the sub. What the physio's doing, I've got no idea. And if that turns out to be something serious, and that movement that he does there made that injury worse, then he's got a lot to answer for. Because I'm telling you now, as a physio, he should not have been doing that range of movement that quickly. Not in my, and I'm not a physio, so I might be wrong, but I'm looking at that situation. He's saying he's got a problem with his knee. I don't think personally that I would be moving that knee as quickly, or as like, ferocious is not the right word, but as quickly as he was in that position to see the movement.
It was very vigorous, wasn't it? He just kind of extended his leg, and then Gordon's like, whoa, what are you doing? And like, you're right. You're absolutely right, Pete. It looked like, I've described it before in the chat. What was it? Like a misjudgment. It was a misjudgment from the physio, when you could see Gordon like, mate, what are you doing? And like, it proper hurt him. Really hurt him.
So,
a bit like a comedy sketch where the stretcher comes out, and then the guy's on the stretcher, they drop the guy off the stretcher. Yeah, that kind of... So let's Chris, you want to say anything about Gordon before we move on from that topic?
I haven't really got much else to add from what Pete said. All that I will say is he's going to be a massive miss. If he's missing for the rest of the season, it's a massive miss. And let's hope he doesn't miss the start of next season as well. And this 6-7 month rumor isn't true, because if he's missing at the start of the season, it's a huge miss. And not only that, for the remainder of the season, if we've got Gordon out, let's hope Harvey Barnes is not for the period of time as well, because then all of a sudden we've ended up with two left-wingers to now none again. I know Elliot Anderson come back, and he was trying his best when he come on, and I noticed he came on left-wing too little too late at that point. But, fingers crossed time, I think, on Barnes and Gordon.
Yeah. Couldn't make it up, could you? Especially in the article that he had, the interview that he gave as well. Not seeing the medical team. And
in front of Southgate as well. He'd have been disappointed. Yeah. Mm.
And Tino might get into the... see those reactions there? See that? Catching that? Tino might get into the England squad. I want to go to this next. What Eddie? I didn't hear this, but I just went straight to bed after that game. I just had enough. But this is what Eddie Howe says, and I don't agree with this. Undefeated Chelsea, I thought we were in the game all the way through. We were good in lots of aspects of our play, competitive and on the front foot. But then you analyze the goals we concede, and they're nowhere near good enough. You can't concede goals like that and expect to win.
Don't agree with that.
No, sugarcoat it.
I wouldn't analyze that game and say we were on the front foot. For me, I just don't think we were. There was periods where we looked half decent, don't get me wrong. And I agree when he says that, you know, we can't concede goals like that and expect to win. Absolutely. But to say we were on the front foot, I don't think. I mean, boys, tell me if you think I'm wrong, but I just don't think we were. I think we looked lethargic, slow. At times, I felt like we were second best. But that's how I saw it.
In the first half, watching the game live, I didn't think we played well. Having watched it back again, I'm talking the first half in isolation, I actually thought we played better than I thought we did live, having watched the game back. But for a team that's scored the amount of goals that we've scored, we don't do enough for me in that final third. We actually have quite a few. If you're talking from box to box, I don't think we were too bad. I think, you know, defensively we're a bit all over the place for the goal. There's a couple of opportunities that were, you know, that were comfortably safe from Dubravka, but all in all, I thought after that point we defended and got rid of the ball quite well. First half in isolation. From an attacking point, I thought we created 4 or 5 good openings where we get behind them and we get into the position either the right or left to enter the box, to enter that final phase. And the problem is that we don't do enough with it. So in the before Gordon's injury, he gets released two or three times down that left-hand side. And he does the same thing. And I keep saying to you boys, he does the same thing over and over again. He gets down that right-hand side and he cuts into the right, inside onto his right every time. They're coming wise to it. They know what he's going to do. It's too predictable. He doesn't once go down the left-hand side and just give them something different to think about. You've got to mix it up. You've got to go down the left sometimes and then just whip the ball back into the area on your left foot just to keep the fullback guessing. He doesn't do it. Similar with Miggy. Always cuts back on his left, but we know this. Never drives down that side. And so it's very predictable. We don't get enough balls into the box. At the point in which he switches them and Miggy is then on the left, Miggy then becomes more direct and he actually improves things a little bit more. But again, it's that final third and it's really, really hard if you're a striker. If you're Alexander Isak, you cannot make runs into the box because you don't know whether you're even going to get the ball. If you've got wingers that you know we're going to whip that ball into the box, like Murphy did against Wolves, you know he can be there. But with Gordon and with Miggy, you don't know that they're going to do that. So it's very hard for a striker to make runs. And I think that's the big thing, because even though we've scored so many goals, we could score so many more. And that's my one thing that really annoyed me. But I just think, going back to Eddie Howe's points, we did some good work in between in that first half. But we weren't clinical enough. We weren't good enough with the ball in attacking areas. In the second half, not a chance. Not a chance. We were poor in the second half. Really, really poor.
Right. Let's get to some questions. Who has got the questions?
Well, just having a look here. First of all, we've got a couple of new members. Nicholas Heads, thank you for becoming a loaded ultra along with Dunnell. Dunnell, you've been a member before, rejoining us as a loaded ultra. So thank you very much for your support with that.
Just before we go into questions, and as we're talking about members, I believe I could be wrong, but I believe Gally is in the chat and he says, "Hi all, are we crap again now?" Gally was one of our members draw winners, and Gally sent in a picture of him with his kids getting the new shirt off the members draw. So
brilliant.
Lovely for sending that in, Andrew. Thank you very much, mate. Really glad that you managed to get the shirts. Looking there, all matching and fantastic there, mate. But yeah, really, really, really pleased that you could get the kits, and make sure you're in the draw for the next one as well. But yeah, really nice to see you, mate, and thank you very much for sending the picture in.
And they might get a game pretty soon, the way it's working out as well. Kids of yours. not lovely to see that. Nice one, Gally. Right, more questions.
Let's just rip the band-aid off with this one. There's a few that the first one we've kind of answered. I can't understand Eddie saying that we played well. We just kind of covered that a little bit there. But Tom Dixon just comes straight in with it. Do you think Howe has a future at Newcastle United? All of the talk yesterday after the game, for various different reasons, was about Eddie Howe. So, boys, what are your thoughts on the situation?
Well, I saw what Luke put out as well. But, Eddie Howe, we're with Howe for the rest of the season. I myself would look at things come the summer. But everything, the way it is now, everything's all centered on Eddie Howe. He is the centerpiece of everything. Where Dan Escher was talking about being the wheel and the spokes linking everything. Everything's linked to Eddie Howe now. He's got a bigger role than he ever had, I think, in Newcastle. So I don't think they'll remove him from that position come the summer. And we have to get through with a massive summer of change, both outgoings and ingoings, which we will soon talk about as well. But so I think he's here for obviously the rest of this season. he's here for the summer. Then it's how it goes in the first 10 to the first half of the season. It cannot be a season like this and next season. He's definitely gone by Christmas if it's looking anything like this for me.
Harry Robertson put very similar. Is it time for how to go in the summer? Big decisions from the club. But Chris, I'll on Eddie Howe, just something slightly different. Gary D puts in there, lads, are you concerned that Eddie will be given a substantial amount to spend in the summer? And if performances don't pick up, Eddie goes and the new manager has nothing to spend due to FFP profit and sustainability. So again, not only do you think he'll go, are you worried about that particular question about being given the war chest in the summer potentially? And then not sticking around long enough to see the fruits of that labour?
Fantastic question from Gary, to be fair. It's something that we've not really spoken about. And it's a very interesting one, Gary. And I think this is why Eddie is part of the transfer board. But he doesn't have sole responsibility of the transfers. And I think this is the reason why, because you know, you're right. If we were to give him 200 or 300 million and he buys the exact players that he wants, that wouldn't necessarily work because, you know, football changes. Things change very quick in football, is what I'd say. And, you know, if Eddie isn't the right guy going forward, what we don't want is 4, 5, 6 Eddie Howe type signings who the new manager's like, well, why did you sign him? That's why I do believe there is a transfer committee. On whether Eddie will be given the money, I think the coffers will be open if Eddie's here in the summer. And I'm not saying that very cryptically, as in I don't expect him to be here. It will depend what happens this summer, and it'll depend how the owners want to go forward. I agree with what Daz says in that if we start the season as we're ending this season, seemingly, I know there's still 10 games to go, but if we start the season as we've ended this season, then Eddie won't be here very long. Because I think this is his pass. This is his buy, if you like. But next season it'll be like, right, okay, that blip's out the way. That weird injury problem that you've had all last season, it's time for the fresh now. No excuses. No one's tired. You know, results have really got to turn around. Will he be given the time? I don't know. I suppose that's for PIF and, you know, the board to kind of decide. It's a difficult one for me. And I'm going to sound like a broken record here. The fact that Eddie wasn't backed in January still gives concerns to me. I know some people say that the reason he wasn't given the money is, one, we didn't have the money, or two, we were saving for the summer particularly. And that could well be the case. You know, obviously, I don't know. I just felt like Eddie needed some kind of backing, and it just... the alarm bells rang for me because there was an opportunity, and there still is, but for me in January, there was an opportunity to bring one or two even loan signings in, just something to bridge that gap, and that didn't happen. And that's my concern in that, have the ball gone, do you know what, keep the powder dry, in the summer we're going big with X. I don't know, but Eddie Howe needs to turn this round. And, you know, I kind of feel like a little bit fickle, and that's why I'm trying to be as unbiased as I can, because obviously after that Wolves game, I was like, right, we're back now. Let's do it. And we've had another result like this. And it's not just the result, it's the performance for me that's really got me. And no doubt Eddie Howe probably feels the same. Eddie Howe, I'm hoping Eddie Howe is looking at this squad now, looking at these players and thinking, do you know what? Daz, you keep using this word. This is the word of 2024. It's time to be ruthless. And if he's not ruthless...
Pete's word, originally.
Oh, sorry.
Hold on a second.
Sorry, Pete. Sorry.
I'm not stealing that one.
Sorry. But yeah, it's time to be ruthless. And if he's not ruthless enough, I think it'll bite him on the backside. I think the owners will probably, you know, the owners have probably been having discussions already and saying, you know, what are your plans? What are you wanting to do? And if Eddie's like, oh, give him another, oh, I want to keep him on the squad, he's brilliant and all that, you know, I don't think that'll do him any favours. It's time to cut some loose. We've seen Emile Kraft get an extension. We've seen Jamal Lascelles get an extension. And we've already talked about the fact that that's probably wise, because You can't shift 11 out and bring 11 in. It's just not going to happen. So there is certain players that will get a little bit of extra time, but he's got to be ruthless with the likes of your Matt Ritchies, your Paul Dummetts, etc. And that's if he's given the opportunity. So in a long roundabout way, Gary, I think there's every chance that Eddie Howe will be here, but for me, it depends on how the season finishes. And also, if he is still in the job, I would say he's maybe got 10 games to really keep hold of his job, because if it carries on the way it is now, I don't think he'll last very long next season.
I'm going to come in on one last thing. I'm going to cut that 10 game down to 5 if he does one of two things. Brings in a couple of players from Bournemouth and gives Matt Ritchie an extended contract. Bring Ritchie to Bournemouth. No, bring Bournemouth to Ritchie. Fuck that shit. Something has to change. So he can't go down that road, and I hope that he doesn't. Sorry. Carry on.
No, I don't think. Well, it's already been confirmed today. Not confirmed. Reported on, should we say, that Luke Edwards has said that the club are behind Eddie Howe. He'll be in charge next season. That's as far as they see it. He'll be in charge of the club. He'll get the summer. That's what he's reporting with all the question marks. Look, I'll just reiterate what I tweeted out last night. I was very, very clear on it. Is that it doesn't matter who you are, whether you're Eddie Howe, whether you're Pep Guardiola, whether you're, you know, David Moyes, De Zerbi, whoever it is. If you're continuing to make the same mistakes, eventually you will lose your job. It's as simple as that. And for me, the big mistakes that he's making right now are tactical and personnel. Not playing the right players in certain games, tactically not setting us up right against certain teams. Now, looking at the way everybody knew or expected Newcastle United to play a certain way. Everybody in the studio, Ian Wright, Jamie Carragher, saying the same. Sit deep, pick them off. It worked at Wolves, played really well at Wolves, gone back to basics. It'll win you the game. Why? It's because it's the one way that Chelsea don't like to play against. They don't like to play against it. And they don't find it easy to find those gaps in behind. And you could even see it. They were struggling even to score with his going gung-ho and going intense and pressing. Like, they struggled with that. But the fact that we didn't sit in for the first 10, 15, 20 minutes, make it really awkward for Chelsea, get their fans on their back because they're not getting in or they're not looking like they're going to score, and then trying to pick them off, like we did against Wolves, came to our detriment, because their goal was exactly what we did to Wolves in the game last weekend, is that they went and caught us on the break and nicked a goal, and then they were in front. Yes, we equalised, but they did the same again. We just allowed them to counter-attack and counter-attack and counter-attack, and we can't do it. We haven't got the goalkeeper to do it, first and foremost, to play such a high line. We haven't got the centre-backs to do it, because both of them are not as fast as each other. You need one pacey centre-back and one centre-back that's maybe not as pacey, but is more intelligent, more manoeuvrable on the ball. Playing them both together with such a high line isn't great for Newcastle United, and it isn't. You have to have really fast fullbacks to cover that, and we don't. Livermento, yes, but 9 times out of 10, it's Burn and Trippier, and they're not fast either. So it just doesn't work. And I just wanted to see Eddie Howe plays a different way to get us points on the board. It's the most important thing right now. But there just seems to be, and everyone that knows me for the last 3 years, I've talked about Eddie Howe in a real, real positive light. And I really do. And I still think he can do the job at Newcastle United. But there seems to be an air of stubbornness about him where it's going to be his way. I'm going to do it my way. And it's going to work this way. But that's not how the top managers work. The top managers have to change it sometimes to get results. Sometimes they'll have to go, you know what? We need to sit in. We need to sit in and do the job and make it difficult. Just like what he did against Villa at Villa Park. He never plays five at the back, but he knew in order to get the result there, he had to do that because they were going to go in. And he made the right decision there. And I thought that was the change. But he's reverted back to type again. And that will end up being his downfall if he doesn't learn from those mistakes. Because he's still young in the game. He's 46 years old, right? He's still young at playing at the top level of football. But he has to learn. If he doesn't keep learning and changing and evolving, he is going to be in the same position where we are losing games where we could have won that game. That game was winnable. That was a winnable game. I've got Chelsea fans that have been messaging me laughing because they know how shit they were yesterday.
Yeah.
And Chelsea not celebrating a great win and a great performance. They're laughing because they're thinking to themselves, how did we win that? I spoke to Charlie. Charlie dropped me a message this morning and he was like, it wasn't air. We beat you. You're rubbish. It was both teams were really poor. Both teams were really poor. And we, but you were just worse. That was what Charlie said as a Chelsea fan. Both teams were poor, but you were just worse. Imagine that, knowing that, that we, when so many teams have toppled Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, that we've gone and we've rolled over to them a game that was winnable. And that's what I'm not happy with. That's what frustrates me. We can't afford for that to keep happening. Ultimately, yes, he'll probably be in charge in the summer. The only thing that stops that is PIF. And nobody knows what they're thinking right now. So it's just Amanda Staveley, Megan Guidusi, Jamie Rubin, fine. They want him in charge, no problem. But they're not the majority stakeholder. They're not the majority owners of Newcastle United. And all it takes is for one phone call and one decision to be made to say, we need to change here. We need a top-level manager to come in now and revamp this team. And that decision gets made. So I can't 100% sit here with confidence that Eddie Howe will be manager next season because I don't know what PIF are thinking right now.
Mm. No. Agreed. Yeah, the decision could be just taken out of their hands, for sure.
Do you think it'll, and this is just a little extra comment on that. Do you think if a top manager becomes available and obviously Liverpool go in for them, do you think that forces our hand in any way in terms of, oh, you know, a manager's, you know, like when Jurgen Klopp became available, Liverpool went all in on him because they wanted him. Do you think if a top manager became available and, you know, they wanted to come to the Premier League, do you think that would factor in PIF's thoughts in that, hang on, we don't want him to go to Liverpool, let's see if we can get him to come here? Do you think that's an option?
No, I don't. I think they'll go with their own decisions, and it's only when they make the decision to get if they were to make the decision to get rid of Eddie Howe that they'd be lining someone up then. I don't think Liverpool will come into the equation. They're in a different, at the moment, they're in a different place totally. Hopefully they come down a few levels now, but maybe not either with who's coming in to run the show in the background.
There's a small window. From the end of the season up until mid to end of June, is if there's any time to make a change, it's then. If we're getting to pre-season training and Eddie Howe's still in charge, he's manager. He'll start the season. He'll be there at Newcastle United. I think if they're going to make that decision, they'll make it within the first 2 weeks of the season finishing, because PIF will do their assessment of the season. They will review everything and make their own judgments on whether it's been a successful season, reasons why it's not been, and all the other bits in between. So I think if it's going to happen, it'll be a swift process because they'll want to do, just like they're doing for the sporting director's role now, they'll want to do their due diligence in that to make sure that they're getting the best manager possible, just like they want the best sporting director possible. So if that was to be the case and Eddie Howe isn't the guy moving forward, I think we'd know about it quite soon after the season finished. Maybe even towards the end. If we've got nothing to play for by the time we're going last couple of games, last game or so, I think at that point we may have rumblings or certainly noises of that being the case. But at this moment in time, it doesn't seem like that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting next two games ahead with the Man City one, FA Cup. Going to be a tall order. And then the West Ham one, who are direct rival for that six, seven players. Definitely. Any more questions, lads? You want to go, Jack?
Seb's got a question here. Is there too much pressure on Botman to be the main centre-back? Does he need competition? I've heard criticism of him recently, but I'm still leaning in that regard. What are your thoughts about Botman? Is the criticism of him too harsh?
No, I suppose Botman has been at, came in and he was at that level. It's just that his performances recently are well down below what his standards are. So he's still our main man, and we need to we need to find the other main man who's going to partner him for years to come. Like Char has been class this season, but there's been games where he's gone missing as well, and especially if we go two goals behind, his head does drop. I found that with him for a while. But other things that Char offers is absolutely unbelievable. So yeah, he's our main man. It's just I think that's going to be the most difficult transfer for us to bring in someone that can do what Char does but is younger. And a few more things, and even people quicker. We've talked about in the past, quicker. Even people and can score a few goals as well, and pick that pass like he does. People we've looked at before as well, talking about. I'm not sure they can do what Char does. So it's a difficult one to bring in. Interesting to see who they fill that void with.
Mm. It's two things for me. I think Seb makes a good point, but it's two things for me. I think the first thing is that, and I liken this, my mates always take the mick out of me for comparing Botman to Van Dijk. But I remember when Van Dijk came back from that nasty injury when he had that tackle from Pickford in the derby, he struggled. Van Dijk really, really struggled. And I think Botman's in that place at the minute. I just think he needs to get over the injury, get his form back, get his confidence back. And I think, you know, that will certainly help. And then the second thing would be, I think as well, a big part of it's the midfield and the goalie. I think once he's got Nick Pope back in goal, or a new number one in the summer perhaps, and he's got a midfield in front of him that's fully functioning and works, I think you'll start seeing a better Sven Botman. I feel like everything's a bit all over the place at the minute. Not that I'm saying that, you know, Sven Botman's playing brilliantly and it's everybody else's fault. I'm not, because he's not been good enough recently. But I do think that they are mitigating factors. And I think, you know, if we had Nick Pope in goal now, and if we had, you know, a fully functioning midfield, I don't think Botman's performances would be as highlighted, to put it that way. And like I say, you know, he's returned from injury. He doesn't quite look right. He doesn't look the same. But that can take time. That can take time. I mean, we were only talking a few months back, saying, "Oh, is Van Dijk, you know, coming towards the end of his career?" And Van Dijk now is playing arguably the best football as a centre back in the Premier League. So he's really turned that corner, and people are reaping the rewards. So I think it's those two things. Give Botman a bit of time, and, you know, sorting the number one position in the midfield out.
That Van Dijk fella, is he Earl's friend? Isn't he? Same guy.
Earl's friend?
Yeah, Earl's friend. Remember the video?
Yeah.
you haven't seen it, Chris?
No.
Well, you have to see that. Oh, no, Earl's in the class video with the three of the Liverpool. Sounds like...
Errol, yeah, sorry. Yeah, in the video. Yeah, sorry, I have seen it, yeah. I was class video, that was really good.
Yeah, it was class. Redmond TV, if you're looking for that video. We move on.
Yeah, I think William Smith has put a really good comment here. Botman has been an eye out to dry a number of times. He's not perfect, but we're sort of begging for a pacey, athletic right centre back and a legit left back, and that's my thoughts
as well.
My thoughts. I'm sorry, but the amount of times that Botman is being made to look bad because he's having to cover Dan Burn, I don't think it's fair for someone that's fighting their way back in. You said, Chris, he's working his way back in and trying to get back up to speed. For me, it's not about athletically what he needs to do. It's here. It's mentally. for me, mentally, he's worried about that injury. That situation with his ACL was handled like disgracefully bad. The fact that he was made to play on that potential injury, and that ACL could have snapped at any point, which would have put him out for about a year, right? That, without a doubt, is still on his mind, because there was, as reports have said, there was arguments within the club, some saying he needs to have surgery on it, which will put him out for 8-9 months, and some saying, no, he'll be all right if he rests it. If he's hearing all of this, that's playing on his mind then. So even when he is back up to speed, and he was nearly there, I think November into December, and then they put it back again because they weren't sure if he was ready. And being through all of that process, that plays with your mind. If you've ever played football or elite sport or even a decent level sport, and you've picked up a bad injury and you're not sure whether you're ready to come back or not, whether it's a hamstring or an ankle or whatever it is, there's a mental aspect there. You're worried about it going again. You're worried about it like going completely. And I think there's an element of that with Sven Botman, and him then coming back into the team, and everyone just thinking he's back, he's going to do what he's done before.
Yeah,
he needs time to get himself back into it. And he's had a number of games now, but when you're having to cover Burn in those situations, or when you've got a goalkeeper that stays on his line, so you're having to make a 3, 4, 5 to 10 yard sprint further than you would normally need to do, because normally Pope would come and clear it for you. That changes your way in which you play. Like, that makes a difference when you're having to do those further sprints more often than you normally would, and you're putting yourself under that strain. It's a mental thing that takes time, and we probably won't see the best of Sven Botman until next season. Having a rest, then coming back to preseason and going again is where you'll probably see the best. But long term, we need a right centre back, because as much as we love Shaw's 33 this year, and we have to at some point start to look beyond him, because he's not going to play forever. Just like Kieran Trippier, he's not. So we need to look at who's going to partner Sven Botman moving forward. And the points you made, Daz, with regards to Shaw being great on the ball, nobody can do what Fabian Shaw can do on the ball. No other centre back in the Premier League, no other centre back, as far as I've seen, is as good effectively on the ball with his passing range. No one is like him. Mm-hmm. However, what we then need to do to combat that, because I don't think we're going to get a centre back in that's as good as that on the ball, but what you're going to get back in that is electric pace, fingers crossed, to recover and to win the ball in those areas. However, what we should be doing anyway is having midfielders that can do that. So it's about replacing a Sean Longstaff that's got a range of passing, so we're not then dependent on Fabian Shaw. It's about replacing a Miguel Almiron with somebody that's got a range of passing, so it's not all on Fabian Shaw. So it's not that we're putting pressure on, playing it across the back all the time, doing all this business where we're putting pressure on ourselves that we can do our best football moving forward. So I think there's things that need to happen there. But yeah, I agree with what you said, William. I don't think it's Sven Botman's fault at all. I do. I think there's other factors that are playing into that for sure. Couple more questions. Let's have a look here. So Tom Dixon says, the next 5 Premier League fixtures: West Ham, Everton, Fulham, Spurs, and Man United. He's not said it, but how many points are we getting from that? Or where do you see, more particular, where do you see the wins coming from?
All right, well, first off, we go one by one. We're at the West Ham game, the 3 of us. It's going to be very depressing if we don't win that one. So that we have to say a win there.
We've got to win that game. Got to win that game. Got to.
Yeah. Home. Got to. Have to. Then we've got the Chris Hall derby. Chris needs to win
we've
that
got to
game.
Win that. We've got to win that
we
as well.
We need that got game. To. Chris will we be doing the reaction, leading the reaction show that night.
Mate, we owe them one big time. Big time. I'm still getting reminded of that 3-0 Ole 29, as they keep talking about the better goal when we'd basically given up. That was probably there. They'll be making a DVD of that, I'm telling you. But yeah, we badly owe them one. The first two, Daz, you're absolutely right. Anything less than 6 points I just can't accept that. Just can't accept that. It's got to be 6 points for me.
Then Fulham, who we've beaten away from home and the cup as well, I think. Mm. Yeah,
that'd be a tough game. I think I'd say draw on that. That'd be a tough game. Mm. Mm. We're capable of winning it.
On paper, we're capable of winning them all, but it's just the circumstances we'll find ourselves on the day.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And this season. I think we win that one, Fulham.
Pete. Freeman's on the bounce, eh?
Never learn.
No, I'll take that all day long. I think we can win it. Safety first, probably a draw. So I'll probably say a draw on that one just for safety, but more than capable of winning that one.
Spurs, this for me is the most difficult. Well, I know away at Man United it's going to be hard as well, but Spurs.
Mm. Weirdly. I think I'd fancy us more at home to Spurs than I would away at Fulham. I think Fulham would be a difficult game. I really, really do. But Spurs, you can definitely get at them. And I think at St. James's as well. I also wonder whether, you know, like the pressure will really get... The thing that worries me about Fulham is Fulham haven't really got anything to play for. Whereas with Spurs, I just wonder whether the pressure will get to them. And they know that on our day we can match them. And I just, I think they'll go into that game and think, oh, we've got to win. And that's why I think that we might turn them over. I fancy us more at home to Spurs than I do away to Fulham.
I can draw for that one.
Yeah, pressure's all on Spurs. It is. The pressure is all on them. We can definitely win that game. We can cause them problems. They play with such a high line like Villa do that there are wins in there, but they've got some superb players. And Doggy is just quality. I was saying to Toby the other day that Sarr in midfield, the board he put in for Madison's goal. I remember that Sarr when we beat them 6-1 last season. He had to get dragged out for that 20 minutes because he was shocking. Yeah. He is a reborn player. He looks a proper player.
Yeah.
He looks really good. They're a good team. I'm going to play safe here. I'm going to say draw. I think we can win, but I'm going to say draw.
Yeah, and the last one, it's Man United. I don't care where we're playing them. If we're playing them on the moon, we have to win. I don't care.
We do. Another tough game. I think the two standouts for me, again, I know they're both away, so it's quite obvious, but I think Man United's away and Fulham away. They'll be the difficult ones. But if we can, again, they'll be in a similar position to Spurs. They'll be expected to win, especially being at Old Trafford. But again, I'd probably take a point, but we're more than capable of winning. That's what we keep saying for all these fixtures. We're more than capable of winning.
5 wins, should have been fifth spot in the league then. No, it's something, you know yourself, things are going to blow up along the way, as they have done all season long.
Most probably.
Like last season.
Yeah. I just hope they don't blow up in the first two games. As long as they don't blow up in the first two games, I'll sleep easy. Yeah.
If we win that next five, we're getting Europe 110%.
Yeah.
Even
question for Chris.
Go on.
Sorry, Pete. Question for Chris. You have to choose one, a win from the West Ham game or an Everton game. What are you picking?
Everton all day long, all day and all night. But I must say,
we can blame you.
I must caveat that in that obviously we're going to be at the West Ham game. So the West Ham game will mean a lot and it will put a big dampener on our weekend if we don't get 3 points against West Ham. I really want that's why I was so adamant before saying like those two games are the must win. If you said to me now we can only win two of them games, I'm picking them two all day. But Everton just more because we can't get no points against Everton in the season. We just can't. I may as well move out. If that's the case, I may as well just go and move somewhere else because
it's a bit selfish that one, Chris, but okay.
I don't, mate, I just I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm still hearing about the 3-0 now. I can't have another, especially St. James's. I just can't.
Okay. Right, are we got that it for the questions?
A couple more, or maybe one more. What sort of team would you play on Saturday?
Your team.
So if you were to pick your 11 now, who would you have out there? From who's likely to be available?
I don't think we stand a chance in this game.
I think Eddie Howe's got to name his strongest team, if I'm honest. I think he's got to, because our season, it's season defining really for Eddie Howe, because you know, if we get through against Man City, all of a sudden it changes the landscape a bit. In terms of selection, I don't want to ruin it too much, Pete, because I know we'll probably talk about it in a way days. But I would definitely have Jacob Murphy in there, put it that way, and if fit. And I'd name the strongest 11 possible, because we've got to go for this. And let's be honest, lads, I've been saying this, I've been watching Man City for the last few weeks intently, because obviously we're wanting Man City to pip Liverpool to the title. Man City don't look good at all. And will Man City kind of feel the way we're feeling in terms of, oh, this isn't important? Man City want the league, Man City want the Champions League. They won't be that bothered over the FA Cup. I'm not saying Pep doesn't want to win it, but this will be the lowest of the priority. And I think if we play the youngsters, I'll be a bit disappointed, because let's be honest, this is our only chance of silverware now. And I really hope that we go for it, because we're not that far away from Wembley, boys. 90 minutes from Wembley, and then all of a sudden the mood changes.
Only Man City in a way.
And then we get Wolves, and then we get to the final.
Yeah, I'd love it. Love it.
What about you, Pete?
I'm playing most of the players that played on Monday. There's a few people who Rich Dobbins just put, drop Botman. No, why? You let them off easy after that performance. They need to get back on it and go in. You need to put performance in here. You need to put a performance in right before the international break. Go out and do a job for the team. And I bet you any money sets up to defend in this game. He'll set up defensively to counter-attack in this game. It won't be all out press. He'll sit back in, he'll sit deep, he'll try and hit on the counter. So I think Dubravka will play. I think the one change that I think might happen is that he might play Kraft. He might play Kraft and Livramento. Right and left back, that might be a change. You might give Burn a rest, because Burn being in against Man City could be a very, very difficult afternoon for him, more than normal. But I'd go, Kraft right back, Livramento left back, Botman and Shaw. In the midfield, I'd be throwing Miley in there. I'd give Longstaff a rest, move him out. Yeah. Bruno, because I don't think he can get suspension from this game, so I'd play him. I'd be playing Joe Willock as well. And then I'd be going, well, you got Richie Murphy.
Anderson.
You got Anderson, yeah. I was about to say, Anderson could potentially play and get a start there. Target's on the bench, but I don't think they'll start him because they're just back in training. And I'd go Alexander Isak, because there is nobody else. We have literally one striker now. Even our backup striker is now potentially out for the season. So we have nobody else. It is absolutely mind-boggling. We better learn from these mistakes. We need to start signing players right from the beginning in the summer. We cannot mess around. I'm really, honestly, boys, I'm really interested to see who we sign this summer. That tells me the intent that we've got going into next season. It really does. Because this squad of players, look at some of the names that we're talking about here. In all due respect, Dan Burn starting football matches for Newcastle United. He's going to be in the squad next season. Fine. But he shouldn't be starting for Newcastle. Jacob Murphy, in all due respect, Miguel Almirón, Sean Longstaff, Martin Dubravka.
Pete.
Come on.
Stop. I'm going to stop you there, Pete. This is the right time to do this. There's more on notice. Watch this. Squad game is back. Probably next week. And Pete can continue on listening out about 20 more players there.
You just see Pete with a knife like that.
We need to go in. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think it's very fitting that it was put on there. Who survives, you decide. Because, there won't be many.
As well as the three of us deciding, you were deciding as well. So it's like last time, we were going to have keyword hashtags and you put the player's name and which box they fit in. But we might throw in that next week, bringing it forward because we kind of have to know at this stage. That's coming on loaded as well. Also, just a quick shout out as well as we're wrapping up the show is what's happening tomorrow is we're back for Talking Toon. And who we got, Pete?
Yeah, we've got some familiar faces to come in and join us again. Jordy Josh, Jonathan Greenwood from Newcastle Fans TV. So we'll be talking about that big charity game at the end of the month again. And we've got the Jordy Dread. We've got Specs back in the house. All looking forward to coming and joining us. And I'm sure they've got a lot to say on that performance on Monday and their own opinions on some of the things we've talked about tonight. So we'll be definitely putting them through their paces. But just on Jonathan Greenwood, he did kind of tweet out again today about the charity match. We are one third of the way there with regards to the money raised for the Alan Shearer Foundation. If you haven't already and you want to kind of just give whatever you can, towards the Alan Shearer Foundation. The link's just there, just put up on the screen. If you have a look at that Just Giving page, whatever you can, whatever's possible, would be amazing. And it's going to a really good place. We're looking forward to obviously kicking the ball around, but obviously the money that's raised to go into a good place is the most important thing, that's for sure.
Nice one. Just quick shout out to our sponsors. Cheers, sponsors. We'll leave it there. You know who you are. We're going to be going into more detail on that during the week. There's only one thing left to say, lads. Who wants to say it? No, we're not saying it. We're playing this again. Good night, everyone.